Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and I'm actually in an amazing building. It is indeed the Regina McGinn Education Center, and it is at Staten Island University Hospital. And I'm with Dr. McGinn. And so Dr. Joseph McGinn, that's a nice edifice here. You don't look like a builder, but you're definitely, you're very welcome.
Well, thank you for having me here today. This is awesome to be on the show.
Now, this ultra-modern building is actually it's very new. It's about heading into four years or so.
It is. It's three and a half years old when it first opened. It's dedicated simply to educating residents, students, and also some of the community members in different areas of the world of medicine.
Now, we have been speaking over the last few weeks about the Heart Institute, the McGinn Heart Institute, the procedure and the heart, the procedure with the heart that you invented, which sounds like it's too good to be true. So, hence we're here today for that specific reason, because it is. It's amazing, and it has tremendous success. So 750 cases later with the McGinn procedure, why don't you start and tell us what makes it very different and how you come up with it?
Well, you know, everything in this day and age has become minimally invasive. Almost any procedure that is done on the body can be done through a minimally invasive approach. The one holdout was heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is the heart is constantly moving. It's such a critical organ to maintain life that it was never really even thought of. So invented, I don't think that's the right word, maybe pioneered or developed,
mm-hmm.
Because the things that I do are really no different than the traditional surgery. It's just done through a small hole or a smaller platform.
And without a buzzsaw.
Without the buzzsaw and the resulting zipper,
yes.
Which is so popular. It's actually one of the most common operations done in the United States. There's over 300,000 heart surgeries done per year. It's just absolutely amazing how many people have that zipper.
Yes.
This is to try and get people back to work a little faster, maybe get people back to their normal activities a little bit faster. And I think that was also part of the way life has changed. People want things done fast.
Yeah. Now, for months, of course, we think of something other than traditional surgery. We say, okay, laser. We automatically think of something as laser.
Yeah.
Yours is neither traditional nor laser. So would you tell us?
Yeah, there are some buzzwords that definitely patients will pick up on, and they kind of look at it being much more modern when you say the word laser or robotic and
right.
Stuff like that. But this is probably the most advanced kind of surgery you could do on the heart, what's called minimally invasive, where you're going in between the ribs instead of cutting ribs or cutting bones, and you're trying to preserve the natural structure of the chest so that the patient can heal much quicker. Instead of having to heal a big bone, they're healing a 3-inch skin incision.
For the patient, again, traditionally one expects with bypass surgery or with stents, whatever, that this is going to be a lengthy stay, considering that most hospitals, try to the turnaround time is fast because it's expensive, because indeed new procedures have made it possible. For people to get out of the hospital quickly. However, when we think of heart, we're thinking of that week, 10 days, if you're lucky.
Yeah. Traditionally, you know, dealing with the heart and operating on the heart has led to long hospitalizations. But in general, hospitalizations have been cut down significantly over the last 10 years. This is even helping it more. And it's not only getting the patients out of the hospital that I think the big advance here is getting people back to their normal activity level. Because we have patients who go home 3 days after the surgery and then go back to work on day four and day five, or they go back to their normal life, whatever that may be.
Describe, if you will, you know, for us, the very type of, you know, we think of bypass surgery, you know, in particular, how limited is, you know, is the McGann procedure?
That's a good question. The simple answer is not everybody is a candidate, but most people are. I would say probably over 90% of people who are anticipating having bypass surgery can be done through this technique. There are some exceptions, and mostly for technical and logistic reasons, but most patients can be done through this technique.
Are there, is it common for those who have had, you know, bypass surgery, whatever it is, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and they expect that it's time again, or the, you know, the shelf life is kind of running out. Is that too little, too late in terms of, can your procedure be done as a repeat?
It can be done as a repeat. It's not designed for repeat surgeries, but it can be done for repeat surgeries. But we have some very good solutions for repeat surgeries as well. But they're becoming less and less. We started using a couple of arterial bypasses many years ago, 40 years ago. And since the advent of that, the number of repeat times has diminished significantly.
Now, you have your brother is here, and he is smirking because he's not a surgeon. I mean, can you give us an introduction to the kid brother?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. This is my kid brother, as you said, and I always like to emphasize that. But I'm very proud of this guy. He's done very well. He's a chairman of medicine at one of the biggest health systems in the world, and has managed to create an atmosphere of education, research, and patient care that is unparalleled at the North Shore LIJ system. Yeah. And Adrian, as you know, Staten Island University Hospital is one of the major cogs of this system, the North Shore LIJ system. So it's great to be working with my brother in the same system under the same architecture, and welcome.
And you're very welcome indeed.
Pleasure to be here, and nice to hear my brother introduce me like that. It's very nice. I hope my mother is hearing that. It's the bigger brother, we like to call him, and that's both in age and other things. But it's a real change for me. I've been 3 years in this health system, and as Joe was pointing out, it's one of the largest health systems, but I think more importantly, it's one of the more innovative, and you know, we are leading and pushing things forward in terms of healthcare, trying to get out of this, you know, trap of, you know, we make, you know, the business of treating disease and more promoting health and having a fully integrated health system. So, you know, the internist and the surgeon would work together as a team to try to promote health, you know, and through the continuum of care, from primary care to specialty care. And the system is growing, and we just launched our first insurance product this year, Care Connect, which, you know, really puts us on the map as a healthcare delivery system that also insures patients at the same time. So that really makes our business about promoting health.
Right. Now, what do you say to those who feel that, again, taking North Shore LIJ, it's the largest facility, medical facility, you know, east of the Mississippi in terms of the vastness of the, not only the structures, but also in terms of, you know, many of those having taken over smaller hospitals and whatever. Some people may feel, well, wait a minute, this is this becoming kind of a monopoly, or, you know.
Well, I think, you know, I think what you're seeing happen, and New York is an example of what's happening across the United States, where there is definitely a consolidation. But I would think of this, if I'm a consumer of healthcare, I think, okay, these are big places that are getting their acts together. I mean, what Joe has done here at the Heart Center, a lot of this, you know, the expertise that he's pulled together, the systems that he's developed, you know, as a consumer, you want to go to places like this that have a high quality and are surrounded by an infrastructure, versus what we used to see, a lot of small onesie twosie hospitals, and physicians would do procedures here and there. And now, you know, in our big health system, if somebody needs the best heart surgery, I mean, Joe provides that in our health system.
Yeah.
Where before, if I was a standalone hospital, I would just do that by myself, and I would not send to the best. And the health system has major hubs, like here at Staten Island Hospital is one of our major hubs. You know, out on the island, we have two hubs there.
Mm-hmm.
And the system works well that way.
Yeah, the two hubs on the island take up, you know, a percentage of the island itself. Huge, massive, facilities that are there. I just want to come back to Dr. Joe and ask you about, you know, many of us think of Staten Island as being a wonderful place if you live on Staten Island. And we can say that because we don't live in Staten Island. There is a sense, though, that, you know, that it's very isolated, and it is also, as I say, it's a lovely place. We don't think of Staten Island as a, particularly for a hospital and for, you know, your particular area of expertise. We have to say you must be doing something right, because your patients not only come from across the United States, but now we find they're coming, you know, from all over the world.
It's an interesting question. Staten Island is not known for its medical advances, and I think it's more because we're overshadowed by so many major university institutions in Manhattan. But as you look around this campus, and this building we're in even, is a testimony to the kind of money that North Shore LIJ and Staten Island University Hospital has pumped in to creating a world-class medical center here on Staten Island. And it's now at the point where we are emerging as leaders in certain areas in medicine, and one of them is definitely cardiac health. We do have patients come from all over the place. I had a gentleman from India, Texas, all over the United States, come in specifically for this procedure. We have a lot of patients who, when faced with the need for coronary bypass, say, I cannot stand to have 3 months out of work. Many people have mortgages to pay, college tuitions to pay, and 3 months out of work just won't cut it for many people. So they'll fly in here just to have the minimally invasive surgery, get back to work as soon as they can. And I have one little anecdote that I might want to tell you, and it's about a fellow named Joe the Plumber. And his name really is Joe.
It's really his name, yeah.
And he really is a plumber. And it was an interesting story. The guy had, he needed heart surgery. He was proposed to have a triple bypass surgery through the traditional approach, and he was told he would not be able to carry that monkey wrench for 3 months. Well, having his own business, and him and apprentice are the only two people in his business, he couldn't make his mortgage payments. He wouldn't be able to pay for the college tuition. So he said, I can't have that surgery. And then he heard about the minimally invasive approach. And about a week after discharge from the hospital, he was back at the sites working on his trade and salvaged bankruptcy, basically. So it's a good story, because it sort of illuminates why it's so important today, with the economy depressed and people scrambling to keep their incomes, that this kind of thing is important for them.
Let me ask you, Dr. McGinn, about this is a university hospital. This is a training hospital. We do know that you have pioneered this. How is the McGinn technique, how is that being passed on?
Well, interestingly enough, in addition to having this education center, we have opportunities to train other surgeons. And one of the things I decided when I embarked on trying to figure out how to do this minimally invasive is I didn't want it to be just something that I did. So I didn't really think I'd be helping enough people if I was the only guy doing it. So we actually opened up a training center for surgeons, and surgeons come from all over the world. I've had surgeons from Korea, Singapore, China, almost every state in the United States and other countries around the world to come here. They spend 2 days with us. We go over lectures and illustrations, videos, and then we actually do cases, and we demonstrate how to do the minimally invasive surgery.
Okay, Dr. Thomas, you've done some research recently which pinpoints the McGinn clan.
I thought you were going to refer to my medical publications, but that's fine. It's much more interesting is the discussion of the family.
Actually, I was going to say the McGinn click, but that's...
No. Yes, he has no click in his valves when he does the replacement.
on the family history and the Irish.
Yeah, we're third generation, so we're our family. You know, and from both sides, came, it's an interesting story that both from County Tyrone, from the southern around the border of Armagh, and the Gormans and Smith side, and then there's the McGinn actually Stafford side, which. There is discussion whether that's of English origins or not, the Stafford part, which is my great-great-grandfather. But they eventually, both sides, made it to New York, and my mom and dad, not I don't think knowing they were both from the same town in County Tyrone, met and got married. And so we are really from one small town on both sides of the family, dating back to the 1850s. I think the Gormans came via Scotland. They left in the 1880s. Went to Scotland. They got into the dry goods business and then ended up in Brooklyn where they opened up Gorman's Department Store, which was a very well-known store in the turn of the century. And around the 1940s, I believe, that store closed. But
when did medicine show up in the McGinn side?
Well, it started with my dad, Joe McGinn, and my brother Joe is Joe McGinn, the second, and he after the war, World War II, he came back and on the GI Bill he put himself through medical school, and actually started out eventually after working in Brooklyn for many years he came out here to Staten Island with my uncle, his brother, who in many ways they built this hospital, and you'll see their names outside the door here. Thomas McGinn and Joseph McGinn. That's when it was a standalone hospital. They built the training programs. They attracted the subspecialties. So those are the roots that we have. There's a lot of McGinn physicians in the family.
Yes, including Dr. Joe, your son, who is he's in his final
year of medical school. Yeah. And I haven't even told my brother Thomas yet, but he's debating on where he wants to do his residency right now, and it's a big challenge for him to figure it out. And my daughter Joanna said to him the other night, do you remember when we had the groundbreaking for this building, the Regina McGinn building? And he said, well, not really. He said, well, in the presentation that I made, I said, wouldn't it be phenomenal if you got the opportunity to train and learn in a building that Mom built?
You should see how nervous your brother was there. The uncle was going to get, oh, my God. Okay.
Right. Well, we talk all a right. lot about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. I didn't know what was coming, though. I
thought you were going to get a contract there slipped in.
I'd be happy to sign him up. He's a great kid.
Right.
And Joe McGinn the third. So.
And so we got one of your kids, too, is interested in medicine.
Yes,
huh?
Yes. My older daughter, who's in high school, did a rotation last summer in cardiothoracic surgery, actually. So.
Yeah, she's going in the right direction.
She's going
right
in the right direction. Yeah, we're trying to talk her out of the surgical field and get her into medicine, internal medicine. So,
okay, fellow of the Royal College,
yes,
of Physicians in Ireland,
yes.
How did that?
Well, it's an interesting story. I you know, years ago, I was a faculty at Mount Sinai, and there was a physician who was from Ireland and was part of the Royal College, and we got talking, and he nominated me to be a member. And in many ways, for me, this was a good opportunity to really get to Ireland and figure out a little bit about my roots. So, you know, he nominated me. I was awarded a fellowship at the college, and they invited me in for an induction ceremony. So I took Mom, who hadn't, I don't know if she'd been to Ireland, actually. I don't think she's, maybe once before, but maybe 30 years ago. She was about 85 at the time. So I flew Mom out and my wife, and it was a beautiful ceremony. It was in Dublin, right on St. Stephen's Green there. It's a beautiful old building. And actually, it's been interesting for me, because since that day, I've been connected and was invited back to speak at the University of County in Cork.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a couple more invitations in Galway coming up, all from that one ceremony.
One, two, Dr. Joseph McGinn and the McGinn technique. People, maybe there are some people who would feel that, you know, that your procedure is relatively new, and if there was something, an alternative to the dreaded, established procedure, you know, that maybe they would have to take a good look at how you'd, at your technique. If in fact if it is minimally invasive, and the success ratio is great.
Yeah, actually the numbers are growing very rapidly. We're over 800 cases now, and we've published our success rate in one of our major journals, the Journal of Cardiothoracic and Vascular Surgery, which is a very highly respected journal.
Yes.
We also have lots of surgeons around the country who are starting to do this on a regular basis. We've been doing this since 2005 when we did our first few cases. At this point, I'm doing over 95% of my cases are done this way. So it's not really a newfangled thing.
Right.
It's something that we do every day, and it's a routine procedure at this point.
And again, I think it speaks well for those who have, and many of those are doctors who, not necessarily just at the student level or the training level, but many surgeons who have used the traditional source for decades are now, you know, not only looking at it but adapting to it. So.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think that any surgeon who wants to stay busy in this arena has got to learn how to do this minimally invasive. It's absolutely imperative. Otherwise, they will not be competitive. And I think that more and more surgeons are realizing that and trying to learn it. It's not easy to learn, but it is a very valuable procedure for the patients.
Finally, I'd like to ask you, sometimes we get the feeling that, and in fact the numbers used to at least hold up, that bypass surgery, you know, has a finite, expected area, 10 years, 12 years, if you're very lucky, you know, maybe 14 years. Has any of that changed over the years?
Without question, things are changing all the time in medicine. And over the last 10 years, we've even had a change in the type of stents we use to augment some of the bypasses. So what I tell a patient now is, first of all, we're going to give you the best operation that's possible now. That's give you the most longest, most durable result. What happens 10 years from now is going to be amazing. I mean, the things are changing so rapidly. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the medications that are coming on that my brother Tom might be more involved
right.
with are curing the problem that is the basic reason for the need for bypass surgery, which is blocked arteries, atherosclerosis. So things are changing so rapidly. 10 years from now, it's going to be a completely different picture.
Less pain, no broken bones. Again, is a we're sometimes very slow in coming around to say, well, you know, well, what's the risk in this? And there must be something.
What's the downside?
What's the downside?
Yeah. I guess the downside basically is that it's not. It can't be done in absolutely everybody. It can be done in probably 90% of the people or more. And the downside is very minimal. The reality is that this is here. It's here to stay. It's growing. More and more surgeons are doing it. And I believe within the next 5 or 10 years, it will probably be the standard of care.
Yeah. When people, patients feel, well, that's all right, but I don't have any real symptoms now, and I don't want to wait until such time, when I get that heart attack or heart problems, I don't want to be looking for Staten Island at that point.
Right.
Is there, what are the telltale signs with respect to, when a procedure, when something cannot be, solved by, conventional medicine?
Yeah. The typical answer for that is chest pain. Everybody knows it. If you have chest pain, the number one thing you think about is your heart. But it comes in different flavors. Sometimes the chest pain can be crushing. Sometimes it goes down your arm. Even jaw pain sometimes, neck mm-hmm. pain. It comes in a lot of different colors and flavors. The best thing I could advise to anybody is get yourself a good primary care physician. Follow the recommendations of that family physician or primary care physician, because they will guide you to get routine stress tests, get routine blood tests to find out what risk you are. And the key to this is to prevent the risk of a heart attack and identify it early rather than find out when you're in the middle of a heart attack.
Dr. Joseph McGinn, friends, and I'll pass on the information to you so you can get the lowdown, as it were, on the McGinn, Regina McGinn Education Center and Staten Island University Hospital. Dr. Thomas McGinn, the medication, the changes, the improvements in medication, the devil's advocate role here, does that, in some cases, is it more difficult to know than, for instance, well, not necessarily with the heart, but that's a good example, that the new medications actually make it more difficult or maybe just cloud, actual incidents or incidences where hey, don't have that chest pain that Joe was talking about.
The medications really don't, I don't think, interfere with the ability to make the diagnosis whether somebody has, a blocked artery and having, a heart attack.
Right.
The medications, and most of these are preventative medications, and most of those are cholesterol-lowering drugs, the statins.
Right.
And every year there's new recommendations to take them, at an earlier stage of your issues with cholesterol. And there's no question that they're working. I mean, the reduction of heart disease is really significant over the last 10 years, and it's probably mostly due to the early interventions with medications. But I don't think it interferes with, Joe's ability to make or my ability to make the diagnosis of somebody who has the need for an intervention, such as, the minimally invasive procedure. I think that we're, between controlling the diabetes, the hypertension, the high cholesterol, identifying people at risk with family history, we're very aggressive now as a health system to, prevent the need, but if it's there, we have it.
It's easy, of course, today to recognize that the family history, that, that the genes, as little as 10 years ago, people didn't pay that much attention, to it. And now science and definitely the research shows, listen, if it's in the genes, you need to pay a particular attention.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question we've come a long way in identifying the genetic risk factors, the family history, and even, making the early diagnosis of diabetes has been a major, I think, step forward. There's the concepts of pre-diabetes, where we can identify people prior to developing diabetes. And if we intervene early in those cases, all of those efforts, reduce the risk for heart disease, which is usually the main problem that these patients encounter in the long run.
I'm delighted to have both of you, and again, with Dr. Joseph McGinn. The procedure, known as MICS-CABG, well, it's minimally invasive cardiac surgery, coronary artery bypass grafting. The grafting part, we're going to be a stickler here. The grafting. Is that the secret? Is that the ingredient?
No, it's not. Actually, coronary artery bypass grafting, CABG, has been around since the late 60s. It's a very standard operation done for coronary disease. Typically, you would hear someone say, I had a triple bypass.
Right.
And that's exactly what they're talking about. The key ingredient here is that we're doing exactly the same traditional operation that's been done since the 60s. Only thing now is we're doing through a much smaller hole where the patients can actually get out of the hospital and get back to work very, very quickly.
My guest, Dr. Joseph McGinn, Chairman, Department of Surgery at Staten Island University Hospital, Medical Director at the Heart Institute, and the kid brother, Dr. Thomas McGinn, who is Senior Vice President and Executive Director, Medicine for North Shore LIJ Healthcare System. To both of you, we're delighted that indeed that you're able to provide these services without any rival, well, without any obvious rivalry. Although I have to tell you, Tom, as a younger brother, while we were waiting for you, Joe did. He dropped a couple of things. It wasn't that bad, really. About your youth.
Yes, I'm sure he did.
What are you starting here?
Yes. Well, he was the lineman. I was the wide receiver. We've always been on a little different, but it's all teamwork.
A great legacy.
It is.
Have to say.
It is great, and we're very proud of that legacy. Yeah. And thank you for having us here. It's great to be on your show. I know a lot about you and your legacy, so it's.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks indeed. Fans, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.